recently, I took a small tour to Shiloh. There was a mom, her bat mitzvah daughter, and the grandmom. And we got to Shiloh, the place where the Mishkan was, where the tabernacle was, the place where Chana davened for a child, the place where Eli made a mistake and thought she was drunk because she was davening and her lips were moving, but there was no words coming out. And I was showing them around and trying to paint the picture of what was going on. You know, families coming with bringing korbanos, and there is Chana with no children. And her very pain was in front of her, right in front of her, as she saw other people with their children, other people with their families, and she alone without a child. And I, you know, became very dramatic. We're sitting on the rock, kind of overlooking the plateau where they think the Mishkan was. And I said, I speak to a lot of women with infertility issues, and they tell me how hard it is for them to go to shul and see other women that are pregnant. So how hard it is for them to hear about someone else, a good friend even, who conceived, and they're still waiting. So I went on with the story. Of course, the story kind of ends happily. She has a child, and she brings the child back to the Mishkan, and she says a beautiful tefillah, beautiful shira. So from that place of the plateau where the Mishkan stood, we walked ahead to an outpost which overlooks the entire mountainous region, and we climbed up to the top of this outpost. I gave the bat mitzvah girl Tanakh, and I said, now I'd like to hear you read the tefillah of Chana after she had a child. And so this bat mitzvah girl read very, very beautifully the tefillah in Hebrew. We come down from the outpost, her mother turns to me and says, do you know, I was married for 5 years before I had a child, and this bat mitzvah girl is my first daughter. Do you know what it was for me to be here, to hear my daughter read Shirat Chana? I have to tell you, the two topics I have to be speaking about today, being single, and being mature and single, mature adult, and being having fertility issues, are not things that I personally struggle with. But I do speak to a lot, and I do speak to a lot of women around the world in different places about these things. Much of what I have to say to you are things that they have said to me. If empathy counts for anything, I could tell you I have literally nightmares that I can't find a husband. It's true. And then I wake up and go, oh, wait, I'm married. But it does in some way tell you the level to which a person can empathize. Even a pain that person has not experienced, and please God never will. What is it like to want a baby so badly? What is it like to go to shul, you know, and see babies and bellies and more babies and more bellies? How many times can you be asked to be the kfater at a bris? You know, kfater is supposed to be a schooler. You like that, schoolers, right? But schoolers have a child, so, you know, if you don't have a child, they ask you to be a kfater at a bris. So once, the first time it's exciting, the second time, the third time, and you get to the 10th time, the 20th time, and you just want to say no. How many brises can you attend? How many kiddushes? How many painted smiles on your face? The process itself is demoralizing. The process itself, when month after month you're hoping for something, this is the month, and then there's that drop of blood. The drugs that you take that make you crazy, not to mention everybody else around you crazy, that make you a crazy person, moody, impossible. You don't even like yourself when you're on those drugs. The mechanical lovemaking. Oh, this is the time. This is it. Maybe this is the one. This is the... Or, IVF, where intimacy has nothing to do with how you're going to have a baby. The hope. This is the cycle. This is the IVF that's going to work. The disappointment. Another failed IVF. But the eggs look so good. The fertilization process looks so good. They implanted it and I'm not yet pregnant. Walking down the street or going to shul or school or wherever and having this feeling, especially with people you know, that everybody is either looking at your belly or not looking at your belly purposely. Feeling spiritually unloved by Hashem. Why is it that an immoral 17-year-old girl can have a baby, I can't? I once wrote a shiur about Chana, and as I said, I never had this issue, so I went to a teacher I know, and sort of casually, without trying to be sensitive, I said to her, so tell me, as teachers often do this with each other, feel ideas out. I said, so tell me, what's your take on Chana? I said to her, she has no children. She said to me, you know I am Chana. I said, I know, and that's why I'm asking you. Now, here was a very spiritual, religious, deep, personal, tremendous bitachon and amunah. And she said to me, do you know what it's like for me to feel that Sarah davened and she got a baby, that Rachel davened and she got a baby, that Rivka davened and she got a baby, and I daven and Hashem doesn't send me a baby? And that's a person with bitachon. The hardest time is Yontif. The hardest time is Yontif, when everybody else is lighting the menorah with their kids. When everybody else is making shalach manis with their kids in those costumes. Aren't they so cute, those kids? Oh, I don't have one of those. Pesach, when there's no one to ask the four questions. Shavuos, when there's no one to talk about the Torah and how much we love the Torah. Simchas Torah, there's no one to dance with. Yontif is the hardest. Shabbos is also hard. I find many, many people stay away from shul. Women with issues, they can't even face it. I can't go to shul on Shabbos. I can't go to shul on Rosh Hashanah. I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. Trying to keep myself together. And one last thing that I hear a lot of them, both of these things, being single and fertility, I'm going to get to the single part next, but I can't even daven. It's so painful for me to be emotionally open about my pain. It's so hard. If I really tell Hashem what I'm feeling, if I really let out the tears and the agony and the fear and the terror, I will never be able to get through the rest of the day or the rest of the week or the rest of... I can't do it. And I've been doing it for years and I can't do it anymore. Can't even daven. Too painful. I even went to Rabbi Cowan and I said, you know, Rabbi Cowan, I told him this scenario. I said, can I tell them it's okay? Because it's so painful to daven. He said to me, no. You can't tell them it's okay. They have to daven. So I guess you have to learn to daven. As I said the other day, one of my classes, put it all into Hashem and then close the sitter and say, okay, now Hashem, you're in charge. I gave it over to you. I have nothing to do with this. It's fine. That's it. Because there's no other way to get through the day. If you take that feeling with you, you can't survive. So, you can... We're all women. Some of us have children. Some of us don't yet have children. We bless all of us to have children, and easily. I don't want to frighten anybody, but this is the reality of some people's lives. So some things, I have kind of a list of what to do's and what not to do's. Let's start with the not to do's, because you know what's so interesting, we ask people, I think we all experience this. Tell us what you would like us to say not to do and to do. The not to do list is like this long, it's amazing, and the to do list is like this short. You have a good to do list. So, understand the person's anxiety about her situation is so great. Don't tell her. Just relax. Lots of people don't get pregnant when they're not relaxed. I know some of you are groaning. Do you know how often people say these things? Relax and stop worrying. So first of all, that could or could not be accurate. You don't know. And second of all, maybe people actually will stop them from getting the medical attention they need. And most of all, you think they're so stupid they don't know? I always think to myself, you know, when you have to say something to somebody like, once in a while, chef kind of asks me to tell a girl to lose weight. I'm like, do you think she doesn't know that she's overweight? do you think she didn't notice? So you know, you kind of have to assume that people with whatever special needs they have, you're like, you think they didn't do the research? You think they don't know about that worrying thing? They probably do. I know about it, and I didn't have the issue. They also probably know about it. Don't tell a person who's struggling with fertility that thinking negative thoughts is going to, you know, like, or, you know, hurt their chances. Or just be positive thinking, that mind-body connection. There is a mind-body connection, but it just adds tremendous frustration and pressure to say that to a person who's already wishing they had positive thoughts, who's already wishing they could think differently. If only I wasn't worried. Yes, I would like to not have negative thoughts. Don't ask, so what's the next step? Or have you considered a surrogate egg? Have you considered a surrogate mom? Have you considered, I know this great fertility doctor, he's a different kind of fertility treatment, right? I'm just going to quote what somebody said. She said, I was once so offended when someone said something to me about the next step in the process before I was even considering what I would even need to do. So when someone suggested a surrogate carrier before I tried IVF or asked if we could consider adopting, it made me feel hopeless. The same person told me many times she would say to me, the person suggests the next step, it makes me think you don't believe in me. You don't believe this could actually happen through natural process. You don't believe this could actually happen through my egg and an IVF process. You don't believe it could actually happen. You don't believe that because why otherwise would you be suggesting a donor egg? Or why else would you be suggesting a donor mom? Or why else would you be suggesting adoption? Because you don't believe in me. You don't believe this could happen for me and my husband. It makes the person feel hopeless. Even though, listen, sometimes those things are needed. Sometimes you do have to go to the next step, but you don't want to hear from somebody until you're ready to hear it. The feeling that people around you are giving up hope on you is devastating. Don't tell someone, but I know someone who got pregnant because she did such and such at the mikvah, or she did such and such a chesed, or she did such and such a skula. You have to go and just be aware, by the way, that going to the mikvah, even though it's a beautiful mitzvah and we love it, when you're hoping not to have to go this month, you're just hoping not to have to go this month. Maybe this will be the month I don't have to see the mikvah lady. So going to the mikvah even becomes a dreaded and shaming experience. You may say shaming. It doesn't matter what's real. It matters what that person feels. The last thing you want is for someone to suggest if you take a longer bath, you'll get pregnant. So unless you're a spiritual mentor to this person, or a gadol, try not to complain about your kids or your pregnancy to someone who's spending her morning at IVF clinics. You know what? We love our kids. We're happily nauseous. And, you know, there are people you want to talk to about that, but not someone who is just dying to have a child and terrorized and fearful that she won't. Don't try to explain to a person why God is doing this to you. And by the way, this applies to most of these things apply to everything, the truth is. You know, unless you're a spiritual mentor or a godly, like, don't try to say, well, you know, God, it's for the best, and you'll grow from this, gamzu l'tova. You know, or God forbid, if someone had a failed pregnancy, well, at least you know you could get pregnant. You know, there's no at least about this. It's just painful. So try not to moralize. Try not to teach hashkafa. I was talking to Chigurh Gohadavka. Most of these are her suggestions. For a couple of years, she had come to Sharon for 3 days, if you can believe this. And a couple of years later, when she was experiencing infertility, she called me. So over the phone and over the email, we developed a very, very strong kesha, very strong relationship. But it took me about, and she was a raw beginner. She was such a beginner. The truth is that 2 years into infertility, I didn't even have a clue that although she did go to mikveh every month, they didn't have separate beds. I didn't even know that. And so she, you know, I mean, but it took me about 2.5 years to say to her, you know what? Because she was ready to hear it, and I am her spiritual advisor. You know what? You need to learn to be spiritually mature. It's time. We've been through this for 2.5 years. It's time for you to grow in this way. But it took me 2.5 years of emails and phone calls. We wrote an article together for a magazine for women with infertility. Try not to give unsolicited advice from articles you read or find on the internet. They also have internet. Or if not, they know where they can find one. Okay, here's some do's, because I like to be very positive about this. Do give the person space not to talk about it. If she brings it up, fab. Listen, just listen. I'm sure you've heard that, and you'll hear it again. But, you know, the thing that oftentimes this woman said to me helped her survive the most is when she realized for herself that speaking to only a small handful of people was what she wanted, needed, what was helpful to her. She said, all my friends who gave me space were so appreciative, they just let me not talk about it. Always, if it is spoken about, come from a place of hopefulness and optimism. You will have a baby. You will. You know, none of us are prophets. None of us know for sure. You know, and you can even say, look, I'm not a prophet, but you will have a baby. But you need to, you need to believe in this person. And you need to believe that Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to grant that person a baby. The unrelenting positivity and optimism of others can help a person through their own fear and terror. Says this woman, even when I was very bitter, I needed other people's optimism tremendously to anchor me. Daven for them to have a baby. Daven, 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 daven. And you know what? Let's do a little word about davening. I know, you know what? Do not, when you daven, I'm saying it's your spiritual mentor, do not just read a list of names. When you say that name, focus for half a second. What is it like not to have a baby? What is her fear? I need to get into that so I can say her name and ask for her. What is it like for her to be single? Oh my gosh, the pain of that. What is it like to have a child that you don't know if he's going to live or die? What is it like? Do you hear? Don't just say a name. Daven with kavana. Take a list, you know, it's not so helpful. Said this woman that she and her husband got tremendous strength from knowing that other people were davening. And she said, when we could least do it ourselves, it meant the world to us. Empathize with the person, don't sympathize. Empathize means, you know, this woman said to me, I always knew when someone felt bad for me versus when someone felt bad with me. I always knew it made a difference to me when I felt so fragile and alone that a person felt with me, not for me. That a person didn't look at me like a nebuch. Like, I feel your pain. I'm with you in your pain. I know this was said before. Listen when she wants to talk, but not because you want to hear. If she wants to talk, listen and listen and listen some more. She doesn't want to talk? talk about other things. Understand that women who are suffering from infertility, and for that matter, singlehood, are very fragile, and they're just managing to keep it together. You may feel sometimes like you're walking on eggshells. And they may react in ways that have really little to do with what you said, but everything to do with how they feel. And that's true, again, of loss, pregnancy loss, death, everything that we're discussing today, plus everything we didn't have time in the agenda to discuss today. Empathize with the person is in so much vulnerability and pain that she's just managing to keep her head above water. But again, don't feel bad for her. Feel bad with her. Have dreams that you also don't have a child. That kind of empathy. If you're pregnant, please God, and your friend isn't, understand that maybe she's not jumping for joy for you because her pain is so great. But again, and I've learned this from vast experience, listening to other people be upset, but don't hide it from her. Don't not tell her you're pregnant because, oh my gosh, I hope she'll be pregnant by the time I'm my 7th month. So therefore, I'm not going to tell her because we only have a phone relationship. Anyway, she can't see me. When I give birth, I'll let her know. It hurts to hear it. It hurts to hear your friend is pregnant when you want to be pregnant. It hurts not to hear it. But I would say from the experience that I've had, it hurts much, much more not to hear it than to hear it. It's a different kind of hurt. Kol Tovatim a good Yontif. Again, Yontif is a hard time. Just thinking of you, wishing you good Yontif. No. Okay. It's all about what's doing best for them and not what makes you feel good. I want to talk a little bit about being single now. Again, just a disclaimer here. So you're all going to get married. I'm going to make that statement first. I made that the other day at my shidduch. You're all going to get married. You get that? I hope sooner. It could be later. So I'm not trying to put fear in anybody's mind. That's not the point. And I don't want you to absorb that message because it's just not true. You're going to get married. So, listen, I was sitting at a bar mitzvah with this woman. And I don't know. She looked like, I don't know, she looked like she's in her 50s. So I don't really know. She had wrinkles and this and that. And she said to me, oh, she's telling me her journey. She went to this school, that school. And then she finally got married. And she has a 6-year-old child. And she's like, I'm married late and I have a 6-year-old child. And I'm thinking, this lady, I mean, she looks like she's in her 50s. So I don't know what the story was. I didn't ask. And don't ask. But you know what? It's never over until the fat lady sings. That's what they say in Philadelphia. Look, there's a strong emphasis in the Frum community on families, which is great. Great. It's what brought a lot of you in. It's also grating. It's grating when you're the one who doesn't have a family yet. And it is therefore objectively difficult to be single in a world where marriage is the emphasis, where husband and kids are the emphasis. It's not limited to Balei Teshuva, this difficulty. It's not. There are many, many FFDs who are also struggling and not yet married. But it's very hard to live in a world where the family values are so strong and you're not there yet. So I'm told that there's like two general approaches to singles, which are not the right approaches. One is Nebuch. Nebuch. Like, she's such a Nebuch. Nebuch, she's single. Nebuch. Oh, I feel so bad for her. Oy. That's one approach. People don't like that. The other approach is, you're so picky. Like, if you were just, you're so picky, which is like the least helpful thing to hear. You're so picky. Well, and even sometimes it's true. Like, I'll be the first one to say, broaden your horizons and, open up yourself to possibilities. But to look at the victim, like the perpetrator, like, it's your fault you're single. You did it to yourself. That's not helpful. Painful. What? It's true. It's like saying to Redfin, it was your fault. It's your fault. It's not her fault. This is her reality. It's painful to her. Yeah, somebody had a question. Okay.
So why is she so old?
Right. Because God did not send his Bashir. That's right. And we have to believe that. We have to 100% believe that. Even if, you know, whatever. It's not, as I said, it's not over. You're all going to get married. Everyone's going to get married. And that's it. I was told people I had an aunt who got married at 78. She was even older than the lady yesterday, but she did not have a baby. But I will say she had 10 wonderful years with her husband. Wonderful. He treated her like a queen. So from 78 to 88, she was a queen. It's true. One of the very difficult things that single people feel, single women and men, I believe, also feel, is that in the frum community, you're always a girl until you're married. You could be 35, 40, 45, but you're a girl because you're not. I don't. The frum community has got to catch up to this. But the word, you know, the word "girl" goes back and forth. Girl, woman. It's not the word. It's the attitude. It's the attitude. You know, sometimes women don't mind being called girls, sometimes they do mind being called girls, but the attitude that there's still a child. I once had a woman say to me, I actually asked her for a donation for the building here, and I said to her, I asked her for a certain amount of months, it was like a nice sum, $100, $120 a month, and for 2 years, and she said to me, "Thank you for asking me." You know, everywhere else in the, she said, "I am 38 years old, I'm a highly valued professional in my field. I run an entire department in a hospital. But in the frum community, I'm a girl. And what you just did is you treated me like an adult." I said, "Great, sign the check." Which she did. And subsequently, 10 years later, she did get married. It's hard to always be a guest at someone else's table. In the beginning, it's cute, it's nice, it's fun, it's whatever. But after 10 years of it, it gets wearing. Someone else's table, someone else's house, someone else's children, someone else's yontif. It's hard. The hardest time is yontif. And this is true, by the way, not only of single, but of single parents. The hardest time is yontif. When everybody else is sitting down at their Seder table, but you don't have your own Seder table. A single parent, everyone else is sitting down at the Seder table, but there's no father at this table, either because he's not in this world or because he's in a different part of the city. The hardest time is yontif. And so the hardest time is lighting the menorah, you know, without the full family or without the family. Yontif emphasizes what is missing in my life. It's hard to go to shirim, where, you know, they talk about husband and kids, and treat your husband nicely, and be good to your children, don't yell at them when they come to school, be sure that you have a smile on your face. I wish. It's hard to feel you don't matter to anybody. At least a single parent has kids, you know, they feel like they have different pressure, like, oh my gosh, I'm the only one in the world who could take care of this child. But it's hard to feel like, you know, what if I left the world today, who would care? It's heartbreaking, it's painful, it can become bitter. Women, especially, who are married, who are single for a long, long time, it is normal and natural for them to become bitter. I always tell them, don't do it, don't allow it in yourself, because nobody wants to marry a bitter woman. But it is normal, just know it's normal. It's just hard, year after year after year after year. Dating is exhausting emotionally. Again, we have a cycle, hope, disappointment, hope, disappointment. And it even gets hard to, like, go on dates, because, like, what for? It's not going to work anyway. It never does. All right, I'll go. But then when you go like that, so it's also not good, eh? The fear of the biological clock, and that everybody is aging your womb. And how old is your womb? How old? They don't really mean how old are you. They don't care how old are you. How old is your womb? I once had a fight with a rabbi. I told this to the women in my Shidduch lecture the other day. He was telling me about whatever. And how old is she really? Because he really wants a lot of babies. I said, I don't know, Rabbi, where you learned? But where I learned, I heard that God gives babies. Did you learn it differently in yeshiva? And then I told him, from now on, you have to talk to Rebbe to breastfeed because she's nice. Actually, Rebbe and Raphael do it now. It's hard to stay happy despite the fact that what you want the most in the world has not yet happened for you. So that's how a person feels. What do we do? How do we react? What do we say? What do we not do? You know, sometimes the truth is you just don't know. Sometimes the truth is you don't know what to do. Always err on the side of caution, I would say. You know, sometimes, you know, err on the side of caution. And be aware that even erring on the side of caution might not be the right thing, because we have that eggshell problem. You know, that eggshell, like, you know, if you don't know what it's like to feel like you... That's how your mother feels with you. She's always walking in eggshells with you. You don't even realize it because you know you're walking in eggshells with her. I'll tell you a story I heard. A situation with my daughter-in-law, who's very wise, young and wise. She has a special needs child. And in the early... discovery of this, or, you know, we're not yet diagnosed, it was extremely tense between them, it was tense between us and them, the whole thing was tense. I've since matured and learned a lot from the situation, and so have they. But I remember one remarkable discussion, because I was feeling, oh my gosh, like I can't do anything right, I can't say anything right, I can't do anything right, my daughter and I had a very open discussion. I said to her, look, I just feel I can never do the right thing. I can never say the right thing. If I ask how she is, you're wondering, what does she think, I'm not treating her right? And if I don't ask her how she is, like, what is she thinking? You know, she doesn't love me, doesn't love that child. If I play with the child, what do you think, I don't play with the child? If I don't play with the child, what, you can't play with the child? Like, I'm feeling, I said to her, no matter what I do, it's wrong. And then she said some very wise words, which I've quoted over and over and over again. She said, Ima, please understand that for me, it's like an open wound. You touch it, it hurts. You don't touch it, it hurts. You notice it, it hurts. You don't notice it, it hurts. Because the whole thing just hurts. And no matter what you say or what you do, it's true, it hurts me. That's what it's like sometimes. People who have special needs kids, fertility issues, single things, whatever ails you, whatever you're suffering with, it just hurts. So kind of understand that when you're dealing with anybody in a difficult situation, whatever you say or do, it just might hurt because the wound hurts. Just like you have to believe in women that they're going to have that baby because they are. I remember my youth, I was so stupid, but I had a student came in one day, really it was Rosh Chodesh Kislev, she came in, she said, you know, but she went to the doctor, newlywed, went to the doctor said, you will never have children. Really, it's a true story. She said, you will never have children. This was 25 years ago. And I was much less experienced. I said, of course you're going to have children. Like, I know the world, I know everything, I'm like 30-something years old. Of course you're going to have children. I don't know, you're going to have a baby, you're going to buy a baby, you're going to adopt a baby, you're going to get a baby, there's going to be a baby. She has five children. Hanukkah, Rosh Chodesh Kislev, she came to tell me, the doctor said, you will never have children. The first day of Hanukkah, she came in and she said, I'm pregnant. What do doctors know? Nothing. They're just a shaliach from Hashem. Tov. Same thing with single people. You will get married. It will happen. It is going to happen. It hasn't happened yet. Always hope and believe because it's true. Not because, you know, you're a namby-pamby. Don't be namby-pamby. Be real. Believe it, believe it, believe it. And never give up hope. Be kinder than necessary, for everyone you meet is fighting some kind of battle. A few don'ts. As I said, the list is longer than the do's. Don't ask singles at meal or in front of others if they're single. Oh, and are you single? Are you looking? Can you marry a Kohen? Yes, yes, and I don't want to tell. You know what? Don't ask singles at the table or in front of others if they're single. Don't frown on them when you find out that that single, that mature single, has other siblings that are single. Oh. It's a familial problem. Don't ask the single, why are you so picky? Why aren't you married yet? Do you not go out ever? Don't treat singles like they are children or half people. They are adults. They have what to offer the world. Don't talk about babies in front of singles. And this happens a lot when it's like married couples. Especially with little kids. Married couples, little kids at the same table, and there's a single person there, and they're like, oh, yeah, my baby, and I'm lucky, and I use this. You know what? Find a different topic. Talk about computers. Anything else. Huh? Don't talk about Facebook. Don't be on Facebook. Don't do Facebook. Again, this I heard from a single, she said. Maybe people feel differently about this. I don't know, but I'm going to throw this out because people feel very strongly about it. Do not say, in Yirtz Hashem by you. It's bad grammar, it's trite, and it's annoying. But I would say at the same time, maybe you don't want to say Yirtz Hashem by you, but maybe at that very, very moment when you see her, you want to put in a little tefillah to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Not say it to her, but say it to the one who knows where the Shidduch is, because she has no clue. Just at that moment, you see her, she's right in front of you, I'm davening. Don't say it, but, you know, just daven. And feel it at that moment, she's looking at you. People should not jump to problem solve when a single tells them they're single. Oh, maybe it's because, you know what, just listen and be supportive. Don't push singles to do things that are uncomfortable for them. Not everybody meets at singles events. Not everybody has to go to Shotgun X. Not everybody has to be on the Sawyer Sinai. If somebody's not comfortable, they're not comfortable. As long as they're doing a reasonable amount for them, that's enough. That's it. Finish. Don't push more. Don't ask a single, so how's dating? It's kind of like asking somebody, how's your marriage? How's your chemo? How's your financial situation? It's very personal. It's deeply personal. It's deeply personal. It's deeply painful. It's not public property. Don't offer unsolicited advice. If you have an idea, and you should be thinking of one, check it out first and then ask the single. Check it out first. Is he available? Is he blah, blah, blah. Don't do all the research before you say, I know a guy. He has pants. He went to yeshiva. He's still there 25 years later, and he's looking for a wife to support him. You want me to check him out for you? Some do's, some positives. Do call to wish them good yontif. Do call to invite them to your Shabbat table, and don't wait for them to call you. Something I'm not so good at, I acknowledge. Talk about life in general. Life is not only about being single and dating and men. There's other subjects. There's chocolate. Swiss chocolate, Hershey's Kisses. What do you prefer? Listen to them, empathize with them, believe in them. Daven for them. Oftentimes tell people, take it on yourself to make one phone call a week for them. Pick one single. One phone call a week. It doesn't even have to be the phone. If you meet someone in the supermarket, you can do it there and get it over with. Do you know anybody for? I'm looking for... Because the truth of the matter is, most people are get married through a networking of some kind or another. It's like, you know, it's... We go to Shekhanim, whatever, singles advice, so you sign up, whatever you want to do, and all those things work, but mostly what works is people introduce people. So, you know, I once had a single, I once had a single. You like that? I had a single. I was very close with this particular single woman, single for a very long time. One of her friends said to her, you know, I'm going to make one phone call a week for you. This is what I decided. I'm going to make one phone call a week for you. And that single woman said to me, I don't know if she's a final one, but I share it. But you know what it means to me that she's going to make one single phone call a week for me? It meant a lot. My last words are, include single women and men as mature, valuable members of the community. They have a lot to offer us, the Jewish people. Ask them to help out, not just babysitting, which is, or make, help me make Shabbos, which is okay, because some people do like that, actually. And it makes singles like to feel useful, just like every other person likes to feel useful. But also, they could share events. They could, you know, take on projects. They could, you know, there's lots of things they could do to help us. They have creativity. They have energy. They have skills. And those of you who are single, and I see the majority of people are, jump in and do it. Don't just feel like, oh, like I'm the pathetic girl in the firm community. Take on a project. Contribute to an organization, whether it's financial, because you have the money, because you're, you know, a hospital administrator, or whether it's klachas, energies. Because you know what? I have time and energy, and I'm gonna use it for Klal Yisrael. So, it works both ways. I don't know which is first in this particular case, the chicken or the egg. The mature singles have to feel as full members and do things, but we also need to utilize your strengths to help us and us, the Jewish people, because just because a person's not married doesn't mean they're not fully adult, fully skillful, fully capable of doing for the Jewish community what needs to be done. Thank you.